Welcome to this morning's talk. And what I wanted to talk about this morning was the role of wisdom in developing samadhi, and how we can use the faculty of wisdom to develop deeper and deeper states of peace and stillness. And it's an important factor in meditation, because very often that you can, as it were, be banging your head against the brick wall again and again and again during the meditation retreat, and all you really need is just a slightly different way of looking at things, a little bit of insight, and you'll find that that is much, much more powerful than all of the willpower which you can exert spread over many, many days. This one moment of wisdom is far, far more powerful. And it's why one of my favorite sayings of the Buddha is that nati jananga panya, the panya nati ajayato. There is no wisdom without jhana, and there's no jhana without wisdom. The jhana depends upon wisdom, and when the wisdom depends upon jhana, they are a pair. They go together hand in hand. And so one should always remember that wisdom can be the knife which cuts through the blockages in meditation. And whenever you have any difficulty or blockage in meditation, instead of just trying to do the same old thing again and again, try using a little bit of wisdom, a little bit of understanding into the ways of the mind. For example, there is one particular type of wisdom is mindfulness becomes very dull when you keep on doing the same thing again and again and again. That mindfulness seems to always get stronger when there's variety of experience, difference of experience. So if you're finding difficulty arising mindfulness, either in the morning or any other time during the day, try and do things differently. Don't keep the same old schedule. I know that when I was a young monk, I think Ajahn Sumedho at that time always said a good test of your mindfulness is being able to beat the bell in the morning, to get up before the bell started sounding. And it didn't matter if it's only a second or two, just to be able to beat it. Because that means instead of you just being a programmed, conditioned being, the bell sounds, you get up, you are doing something differently. Of course, when somebody said that you shouldn't be a conditioned being, that when the bell sounds you should get up, someone interpreted that to mean as soon as the bell sounds you should just stay in bed, just to show you're not a conditioned being. But you can see that a lot of mindfulness gets strong when you do things in a slightly different way. And even when you sit meditation, do you sit always the same way? Do you always sit in the same place? Now, I've got no choice sitting in the same place. I've got to sit up here. But sometimes, even if you're getting dull, go and sit on the other side of the room, where you usually sit. Sit backwards. Do anything, but don't sit the same old way. And you'll find that just that little bit of wisdom will make you more alert, more aware. Go and sit outside. Go and even sit in your room. Sit in the toilet, wherever it is. And you'll find that because it's different, the mindfulness will be stronger. Because mindfulness gets very dull when you become a creature of habit. It's also why that another way that wisdom can help your meditation, and this is another interesting and informative little trick, that when you do the counting of the breath, right, remember the way I taught it, breathing in one, breathing out one, breathing in two, breathing out two, breathing in three, breathing out three. If you've been doing that a long time, try instead doing breathing out one, breathing in one, breathing out two, breathing in two, breathing out three, breathing in three. And you'll find that that little difference makes it much easier for you to be mindful, because the mind has to look upon the breath in a different way. Instead of starting at the in-breath, you're starting at the out-breath. Breathing out one, breathing in one, breathing out two, breathing in two. And you find it takes that little bit more effort, that little bit more attention. Or you can just start at nine and go back to one instead of one to nine. Whatever it is, if you do it slightly differently, you are cutting away this defilement which lives on repetition, which lives on happiness, which lives on habit, sorry, which exists because you keep on doing the same things over and over and over again, the same old way, and mindfulness tends to take everything for granted, become creatures of habit. So that's one way, the first way I wanted to bring up today, of how wisdom can really help with your samadhi. Do things in a slightly different way, instead of just always doing the same thing again and again and again. Because mindfulness is one of the most important qualities in meditation, and if it's very strong, the meditation will usually be successful. If it's very weak, or it gets weaker, which it can do very easily at this time in a meditation retreat, just because of habit and dullness creeping in, then one is just fighting a very, very hard battle. So try and sharpen up mindfulness by doing things slightly differently. Also, when you start to meditate and you start to watch the breath, if you can't watch the breath, if it's difficult to watch, instead of keeping on trying again and again and again, now ask yourself the reason why. What is the difficulty? Why is it hard to watch the breath? And one thing which you can do, which again I found very useful in the teaching technique, is just stop the whole meditation and say, right, all I'm going to do is just be aware of, I'm just going to breathe in once and breathe out once. And you just breathe in once and breathe out once. And you can watch it, you can follow it. So why is it that throughout the rest of the meditation I can't watch the breath? And you find that the breath is there to be watched. It's just an attitude problem. It's some way, something you're doing which is not allowing the mind to be able to see the breath. It's a wisdom problem. It's not a physical problem. The breath is there. You're looking at it at the wrong place, or you're looking at it in the wrong way. And the wisdom will be able to notice the problem and will be able to find the solution to the problem. A lot of time it's because that one doesn't look in the present moment. Remember, I already mentioned that often that one doesn't look in the right place in the body where the breath is occurring. You may be looking in the nose when it's in the throat, or looking in the throat when it's in the stomach, or looking in the stomach when it's at the nose. And that's one reason why people lose the breath. They're looking in the wrong place. Also, they may be looking in the wrong place temporarily, in the realm of time. The experience of breath happens right now, not a moment ago, not a moment in the future, but right now. And so if the attention isn't right smack in the present moment, you have no real hope of watching the breath. So wisdom teaching tells you to place the mindfulness, place the attention right in the present moment with the experience of now, and not to allow the mind to wander off into the future or the past, not even a moment in the future, not even a moment in the past. If you find that if you wander off a moment into the past, you're opening the door for thinking. Because thinking is all usually about what has just happened. What has just happened you start thinking about. The breath which has just occurred, you may not have noticed it clearly enough. Maybe been a bit dull, not quite sure if it's going in or going out, and you start thinking about it. And when you're thinking about the breath which has just happened, you're not observing the breath which is happening now. And you've lost the track. And once you start losing the track, then the mind just goes off into all sorts of thoughts. It might begin with a thought about the meditation, but then eventually go off into all sorts of other thoughts. So the wisdom in meditation should always know that this meditation is done in the present moment, nowhere else. It doesn't look back about what's just happened, nor does it look to the future in anticipation or expectation or planning what you're going to do next. If I know that teaching so well now, if the thought comes up in my mind, what should I do next? I realize through wisdom that that's a stupid thought. What should I do next? It's what I'm doing now is the focus of my meditation. Not what should I do next. What am I doing now? And so whenever that thought or similar types of thought come up, what should I do next? Wisdom comes up and says, stupid thought, that's not the point. What am I doing now is the point, the meditation. And so with such wisdom, you actually focus in the present moment. And you stop this habit of the mind of wandering off into the past and the future. And you find that the breath can be seen in the present moment. You quite often you lose the breath by going off into the past or the future, assessing what happened, anticipating or planning what might happen next. And there you've lost it. You lost the track. To be able to keep hold of the breath, to be able to watch it continuously, you have to be able to maintain this attention in the present moment continuously. And this is not an aspect of willpower as much as an aspect of wisdom power. And you find if you know that much and appreciate the truth of that, then the meditation gets easier and easier. You don't waste so much time. And even if you do get lost in some sort of thought process, because the thought is that which occurs usually in the past or the future, it's not real experience. It's what you are fantasizing, proliferating about experience, this thing we call thought. One insight which will be very useful to you is just to understand that thought is unreliable. That the way you think is completely dependent upon so many habitual conditionings, particular ways that you've learnt, that you've thought in the past, and that thinking is no guarantee of truth. And it's good to be able to doubt your thinking, and eventually to the point where you imagine it to be completely futile, completely a waste of time, like the rantings of lunatics. And if you can look upon your thinking just the ranting of a lunatic, there's that part in the mind which is completely crazy, which should be locked up, that then you will not sort of get so interested and obsessed with the thinking mind. If you practice meditation with mindfulness, then wisdom will arise as a natural course, that you will start to realize, why is it that the mind goes off in thought? It is because one values that thinking. One imagines that thinking is important, that it's going to bring you to some sort of understanding or truth. And wisdom should be able to analyze not just the object of thinking, but why we think. Why does this whole process continue on? What's the source? What's that which generates thinking? It's just like a person looks at the light on the wall, and instead of thinking, where does that light come from? By looking at it, it just follows the wires. Follows the wires till it gets to the plug. And when you find the plug, you can just yank the plug out and the light goes off. And that's the way you stop thinking. Find out the source of it. Why it keeps continuing on and on and on. And you'll find that there's something inside you which values and thinks that thinking is important. Once you start to develop the doubt in thought, realizing that one day you can think one thing, another day you can think something completely different, which one is right? The answer is neither. Once you understand that neither is right, it's just thinking, just proliferating. It's not coming to the truth of the matter. Then you can take away all the value from thinking. And once you understand that thinking, realize through deep wisdom that thinking is not going to be the way that you're going to achieve insight, truth. Then, because you've taken away its value, it will start to disappear. The energy source which keeps it rolling along again and again and again disappears. Also, sometimes that we look upon thinking as fun, as enjoyable. That's the other reason why it can keep going on, because it's pleasurable. At least we assume it is. However, if we could only know the much greater pleasure of silence, of peace, then we would never regard thinking as enjoyable, as fun. You know, people like to think sometimes, especially when the mind is reasonably clear and they've got nothing else to do. They can sit on a chair out there and think about all their problems. And if not their problems, think about other things. Think about their past. Or think just about fantasy and dreams. They can think about all sorts of things in this world. Why do they do that? Because you imagine it to be fun and enjoyable. So wisdom should analyze that and say, is it really enjoyable? Is it really fun? What is the pleasure I'm getting out of this? And what am I giving up? What am I throwing away? And if you can realize that you're throwing away something which is much, much more valuable than the little amount of pleasure you get from thinking, again, then the mind will turn away from thinking. We'll look upon it as like it's a pain, as an affliction. Look upon it as if like getting a cold or getting the flu or getting some other disease. You don't want to get that disease. You'll avoid it at all costs. You'll try and make sure you don't meet any other people with that sort of disease. If it's contagious, you take vaccinations and other precautions because you realize that diseases are painful. This is like the disease of the mind, thinking. If you can only realize it as a disease, as something which is very painful, which is something which is stopping you from a much happier experience, then you wouldn't invest that much interest in it. As soon as it started coming up, you say, get out. Sort of, I'm not interested in you. And if one can use wisdom to understand the process of thought, to see that thought is very basically dukkha, source of suffering, to see it's got no value in it, it's like reading a book by someone who doesn't really know what they're talking about. They haven't got the experience yet. Then you can just abandon thought. And that's the way through wisdom that thinking can cease. Instead of trying to suppress thought through willpower, I'm going to stop thinking. There I go again, I'm thinking about stopping thinking. Now I'm thinking about stopping thinking about stopping thinking. And so you can't stop thinking that way, it just goes on in a tangle. But if you realize the pain of it, the uncertainty of it, then you can stop it. You can sort of, through disinterest. And this is the way you can stop thinking if it really becomes a problem to you. And wisdom teaches you that how to stay with the meditation object. You look at the mind as you're meditating. Remember I was talking the other day about the four Idipadas, the road to success, the road to power. And that fourth Idipada is one of the most important. Just to recap again, the four Idipadas are the, once you have your goal in meditation, to sustain your will to achieve that goal, to sustain energy to achieve that goal, to sustain the application of your mind towards that goal. And the fourth Idipada is sustain your ability of investigation, the wisdom faculty. And that's one of the most important parts of these roads to success. Not just mere willpower, not just energy, not applying your mind blindly, but also developing the wisdom power. Very often in our monastery at Serpentine, I give an assembly that sometimes in meditation, several stages in the meditation, it's as if you come across a big brick wall. And many meditators, and I've done this many times, have just gone against that brick wall, charging it, literally banging their head against the brick wall, again and again and again and again. They're using willpower, applying themselves again and again, rousing more energy. And they don't realize that just to the left of that wall there's a door, or just to the right there's a ladder, they can climb over it. They don't need to bash a hole through the wall. This wisdom is actually sees to the left, sees to the right, sees other ways of achieving that goal. And always you'll see the ladder or the doorway through, just to the left or just to the right, not that far away. And once you understand that simile, every time there comes a difficulty or problem in the meditation, remember wisdom. Just get a little bit of a wider perspective on what you're doing, instead of just focusing on that same problem, that same brick wall, that same part of that brick wall. Wisdom is that which can see wider and see how to get through. For example, that sometimes people have the problem of maintaining attention on the breath for long periods of time. They can do it for a few minutes. Sometimes they may even do it for half an hour, but they won't be able to do it for the full hour. And very often you can just try more and more willpower, more and more resolution, trying harder and harder. But again, the trick, the wisdom is that, well, why does the mind stay on the breath? Why does it go elsewhere? And after a while you find that the mind or the attention is non-self. It does, it's not under your control. You cannot force it. It's not a slave to your commands. But you can trick it. You can entice it. And the way to keep the attention on the breath is through enticing it to stay on the breath. Instead of using the stick, use the carrot. And the carrot is that being wise enough to arouse the perception of a beautiful breath. And that sort of little piece of wisdom saves an awful lot of effort and willpower. It's just to make the meditation a very joyful and wonderful experience. And wisdom knows that you can look upon anything as either beautiful or repulsive. You can go out into the garden there and look upon those flowers as beautiful or repulsive, depending on whether you've got hay fever or not. You can look upon the weeds in the garden as something to be torn up, or as like part of nature and a rare species. It really depends on your perspective on these things. You can look upon a beautiful sunny day with happiness, or you can look upon it as just another really hot, high UV rating day. When are we going to get some rain in this place? It's really up to you how you look upon phenomena. And with training, or with wisdom, you can look upon the breath as something wonderful, something beautiful, something awesome, as a a very amazing aspect of nature. And with more wisdom, you can see with your inner eye that every breath is absolutely different. Not two breaths are the same. And that gives a bit of a different quality to what you're watching. As if two breaths are the same, three, four, five, six, seven, eight breaths are all the same, then the mind becomes bored. But if you can manage to arouse the perception that every breath is different, then that boredom disappears. And you're interested in the infinite variations of your in-breath, infinite variations of your out-breath. And so what wisdom is doing is saying, well, look, if I have to watch the breath, I'm going to make it interesting. I'm going to look for interest in these things. I'm going to make it interesting. And if you approach the breath meditation in that way, lo and behold, the breath does become interesting. It does become fascinating. When it becomes interesting and fascinating, it becomes easy to do. Because the mind wants to do that which it finds interesting, fascinating, joyful, and happy. So wisdom, once it's aroused and once it's very strong, can help the breath meditation enormously by bringing it happiness, by bringing it joy. But the wisdom is exceedingly important in the breath meditation once you get to the later stages of breath meditation. Once you get to things like the full awareness of the breath. Because it is at this stage, when you get the full awareness on the breath, that meditators can sometimes have the experience of the breath disappearing. And what's actually happening is that wisdom isn't strong enough to notice the experience of breath change. You have to be very sharp with your faculties at this stage if you are going to follow the breath into the deep state of the jhana. This is where wisdom is crucial. This is not just wisdom of knowing the instructions. This is the wisdom which can just watch very carefully and know all the ins and outs of the mind and be able to adapt accordingly. Remember, a lot of wisdom is the ability to adapt to time and place, to adapt to circumstances, and not just to be rigid in the way one reacts to things. That's usually a very good definition of wisdom, just adaptability to time and place. And at this time, the mind has to be very adaptable, because as the attention starts to settle down on the breath, and the breath isn't going anywhere, you're just aware of the breath going in, the breath going out, the breath going in, the breath going out. You have to really watch with wisdom just how the experience of breath changes. Because the breath will start to get refined. When it starts to get refined and starts to get very peaceful, the wisdom has to be up to catching it all the time. So realizing it's not going to always appear as the same thing in the mind. It's going to be like a chameleon. It's going to change its features. But if you're wise, sometimes you know that even though the chameleon changes its color, its general shape is the same. It's still the same chameleon. You have to be wise to be able to see the breath change in this way. Also, you have to be wise to the fact that the whole process of meditation is a letting go, is a settling down, is a calming. And so wisdom always notices anything which is a disturbance, which is like a noise, which is a movement in the mind, should be settled down, should be calmed. It's like settling down a baby in bed at night time to soothe and calm and settle until the baby eventually goes to sleep. And you know that if the baby, once you left the room, you think it's asleep, will cry out, "Can I have a glass of water? Can you read me another story?" Wisdom tells you if you go and give it a glass of water, then next you want another glass of orange juice. Or if you read it another story, then it wants another story. There comes a time when you have to say, wisdom says no. It says no with a sense of firmness to the distractions of the mind. And they go away. So wisdom has to know these things. Wisdom also has to have a good enough understanding at this stage of the truth of non-self. As I was mentioning earlier, that perceptions of dukkha, or the perceptions of anicca, aren't of that great use at this stage in the meditation. The perceptions of anatta are vital at this stage in the meditation in order to gain deeper states of stillness. Because there is something inside which again generates the very refined thoughts, the thoughts which are about the meditation subject, the thoughts which come up into your mind at this stage and tell you what to do and how to do it. And again, wisdom should know the source of that, those controlling thoughts, those ordering thoughts, those thoughts which want to take notes so you can tell your friends how it was in jhana when you got out. Those sorts of thoughts you should know are coming from that sense of self, that sense of me and mine. And that controlling mind has to be given up at this stage. It's such an important aspect of the meditation at this stage, to be able to, as it were, leave one's shoes outside of the hall where the Buddha sits, so one can actually walk inside and be with the Buddha. You have to let go of that which is thinking, which is saying, which is controlling, which is giving you the orders what to do next. And you have to be able to develop the wisdom which just allows nature to take its course at this stage in the meditation. You've used willpower, you've used your orders, your control. You've driven your car as far as it can be driven to the second stage in the meditation. Do not take that car further. If you stay in your car, that's as far as you will get to that second stage. You may get the Samadhi Nimitta coming up, but it won't last if you stay in the car and be the driver. This is why the wisdom will tell you that at this stage in the meditation, you have to develop fully the passive mind, the mind which knows. You have to abandon completely the active mind, the mind which does. If you continue with the mind which does, the active mind, you should know through your practice of meditation what I mean by the mind which does. Look to the source of these thoughts, which are the thoughts which give orders and comments and judgments. Look to the source of that, and you find it's that which judges, that which controls, that which pulls the switches and presses the buttons inside of you. That very thing is what you have to abandon at this stage of meditation. Leave all the switches alone. Leave all of the buttons alone. This is why at this stage it's a very important letting go happening. Letting go of the controller. Letting go of the doer. However, you cannot, wisdom will actually tell you in meditation, you cannot let go of that controller too soon, nor too late. There is a time, a particular moment, to let go of the controller. If the king gets out of his chariot when he's just half a mile outside of the palace gates and still 20 miles to go to the monastery where the Buddha is in, he probably will never get there. It's too far to journey. You have to use that controlling mind up to a point when you get that second stage in the meditation. When you've got full awareness of the breathing, full continuous awareness of the breathing for many, 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 many minutes, one after the other, without any interruption, then let go of the controlling mind. But don't let go of the observing mind. Don't let go of the mind which knows, the mindfulness, the clear attention. Mindfulness is just that, the aspects of the mind which can know clearly what's occurring. And will is that which does and reacts to what one knows. You've got to give up that willpower, that doing, and just abide in the mind which knows. And because the mind does not do anything, does not act, that is why the mind starts, or the object starts, to really settle down. Because that which has been agitating the mind, that which has been causing the lack of peace in the mind, has been taken away. And you can enter the hall with that non-doing, with that inner silence, that clear awareness. You will notice the stages of the Samadhi Nimitta getting brighter and brighter. That brightness is just the brightness of silence. The beauty of having let go of the controller. It's just things settling down. It's the leaf becoming still because the wind has stopped. Things going to stillness, going to oneness, going to one-pointedness. And along with that is the perception of joy and happiness. The joy and happiness of peace. These are natural signs, natural occurrences. Just as when you go into the hall, you see the lights in the hall, brighter and brighter. You see the Buddha's face and brings great joy. This is only metaphor. You don't see a Buddha, but an image of the Buddha in your mind when you get into jhanas. You just focus on the bliss of these things. But if at any time when one is going into that hall, that willpower comes up, you make a comment, you try and take control, immediately you just go right outside, you're thrown out by the monk. You're not ready to enter such a hall. And that is why that wisdom should tell you that this is what you have to let go of, the control. And the only way you can really truly let go of that controlling mind is to have at least some degree of insight into the fact that this controlling mind is just a part of nature, it's not essential, it's something which can be let go of and is worthy of being let go of. To realize it is nothing to do with you. It's not a self, it's not yours, it's not the essence of you. If you don't realize that, then fear will always come up at this point. The fear of letting go of something which you're attached to. Attached to at a very deep level. Attached to the controller. So without that wisdom, that which does is non-self. Not you, nothing to do with you, it's just a part of nature. It's part of having conscious experience, that's all. If you can realize that, then it's very easy to let go of the doer at this stage. It is why that our insight and calm will always go hand in hand. If a meditator does have trouble at that stage, they can get a samadhi nimitta coming up, but they cannot leave it alone, they cannot allow it to maintain itself, then they should do a lot of contemplation of non-self, especially a lot of contemplation of that which does. To keep on looking at that point in the mind, that aspect of consciousness which does, and to be able to perceive it clearly enough to at least have some insight into this as being nothing to do with you at all, something which is worthy of being let go of. Something which is not dangerous to let go of it. And then you'll be lessening the opportunity for fear to arise at this point. Fear comes because you think you're letting go of something important. It's nothing. Nothing to do with you. It's rubbish. Throw it in the bin. That is why that wisdom is important at this stage. But wisdom is also important to arouse at the end of every meditation. And I already mentioned at the beginning of meditation one should be that methodical that one makes a goal, what one wishes to do for this meditation. Make a clear goal. One should be methodical enough that at the beginning of the meditation one recognizes the major obstacles one is liable to face. And by recognizing them at the beginning of your meditation, to set up, as it were, an awareness of that particular obstacle. To say that maybe excess thinking is my biggest problem, and I'll be very wary of this. And this is how you set yourself up at the beginning of the meditation. Now I want to say what you do at the end of every meditation. At the end of every meditation, you should do a bit of reviewing. So look back upon what you've done and where you've got. And most importantly, why? What were the problems? What were the successes? Why were you unable to settle on the breath? Or why did everything go right for you this time? Because those few moments of reviewing are so, so very important to allow this quality which I call wisdom, the knowledge of how you meditate, the clear understanding of your particular problems and obstacles, the clear understanding of what things overcome those obstacles and give you freedom and depth in your meditation. Look back upon your meditation, every meditation you do at the end of it, and analyze it. Find out what went on and why. And then you'll find you are developing the wisdom, developing the understanding of your meditation, of how you work, what your problems and difficulties are. And when it is a success,
you understand why. And if you understand why, when it is a success, you find you'll be more likely to repeat it again and again and again. And the successes in the meditation won't be so few and far between. They won't be like rare but beautiful occurrences. But they'll be regular occurrences. You're getting to know the attitudes of mind, the little pearls of wisdom, which are as important to the car as the petrol is. The oil is also important to the car, as well as the petrol, the willpower. The oil makes things go smoothly. The oil is like the wisdom in this meditation. It smooths your way through these obstacles so you don't grate up against them and get stuck. So by reviewing at the end of every meditation what you've done, what the problems were, where the failures, where the successes were, deliberately doing this, spending a minute or 2 minutes, you'll find that your wisdom starts to increase. But when you're reviewing, review it with wisdom. If there's a problem there, see how that relates to such things as like anatta, dukkha, anicca, dukkha, anatta. See how that relates to attachment. Because when you know that the results of these meditations, the beautiful meditations are just results of letting go, you know that every obstacle must be attachment in one form or another. What have you been attached to? If it's the aches and pains in the body, you're actually attached to your body. You're concerned about it. You're worried about it. Very often the mind is very peaceful for the first few minutes, and then it goes to the body afterwards. You can actually see this. It goes looking for something to disturb itself. It's as if that you come here to this meditation retreat and you start thinking about your home. Even though it's all locked up and safe, you think, well, I wonder if it is safe, really. Perhaps I should ring up and find out. See, there's that sort of attachment which you actually, you're disturbing the house. It's not the house disturbing you. You're going out to think of these things. They're not calling you. You're going out to look for something in the body. Is my body okay? I've been sitting here for half an hour, 45 minutes. Is it all right? Is there any itches or aches anywhere? And of course, if you go looking for problems, you'll find them. At least in my body anyway. If I go looking for an ache or an ache or an itch, there's one somewhere or other to be scratched all the time. Never ever is there not a place to be scratched if I really go looking for it. And that's a problem, because if you go looking for problems, we'll always find them. It's the attachment to the body. Over concern for our body. This is the sort of wisdom which will come up in the meditation. And if you can know the problem through wisdom, know the cause through wisdom, you know the solution through wisdom. And you just say, body's not mine. And then the body disappears. Just as if you say, the monastery's not mine. And the monastery disappears. The house isn't mine. The house just disappears. When you say, not mine, it goes. Thinking's not mine. It's somebody else's. They take it away. It's gone. So when you understand that, look back at your meditation with reviewing wisdom, you find all sorts of interesting and valuable lessons which you will take into your next meditation with you. And that way your meditation will make very swift progress, rather than always battling on the same problems again and again and again. You face those problems and you forget about them by the next meditation, because you don't review. So this is the ways in which one can use wisdom to help the meditation. And it is usually those monks who've got very sharp wisdom who do the best meditation. Not willpower, but wisdom power. That's far sharper and can take you right through to the very depths of the jhanas. You realize that attachment is the problem. Letting go is the solution. So let go of as much as you can. But know the stages of letting go. You should not let go first what should be let go second. If you do, the mind will just go wandering in infinity. Let go stage by stage, according to the Buddha's teaching on meditation on the breath. And then you find everything works according to its natural order. So when you do get into these peaceful states, again, use reviewing knowledge. Why are these stages so blissful? Why are these stages so peaceful? What's happening here? And that reviewing knowledge will give you very powerful wisdom. The deep wisdom into the nature of the mind. The deep wisdom into the nature of dukkha. The deep wisdom into the nature of non-self. And these are the wisdoms which will give powerful insight. This is how one uses wisdom in one's meditation. And very often in my own experience, I gave this talk because very often that you can be battling against the problem again and again and again, and just remember how stupid you are. Stop using willpower, use wisdom power. And as soon as I start using wisdom power, boom, 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 obstacles just fall aside. We remember the Buddha's teaching. So that's the talk for this morning. Has anyone got any questions about what I've just been talking about? Maybe just some of the earth for you.
I was thinking again about wisdom in terms of how you live your life. Mm. I mean, it'd be the question of really, if you're not wise enough in your everyday life, that you're not going to get time in meditation.
You're asking about wisdom in everyday life. If you're not wise enough in your everyday life, you're going to get far in meditation. In a retreat situation, one can leave aside one's everyday life, in the sense that it's already, what, 3 or 4 days into this retreat. So your home life, your work life, your life outside should be fading into the distance by now. And that's why I'm trying to focus everything just on meditation in this retreat. Later on, towards the end of the retreat, start talking about wisdom in daily life. But here we're just narrowing down on one particular aspect of our experience. A meditation retreat, and certainly that if one can learn how to develop wisdom in one's meditation, and we use the same techniques to develop wisdom in one's daily life, whatever there's a problem comes up in daily life, instead of just trying to force your way through it or just endure, then you can use wisdom to find skillful means of turning that problem into something completely different. And also you can manage to build up that attitude in daily life, then you find you'll take that same attitude into your meditation as well. So they will link together. But forget how one has been living one's daily life. And just here, try to put all the attention into calming and developing the mind. Just focusing on one area. And after a while, the mind settles down just on that one area. And that becomes, it's like you're going into a monastery for a week. Actually, this is a monastery, isn't it? Redemptorist monastery. But not just physically, mentally. And it's a beautiful release from the problems of the world. That's why I don't like to bring up those problems of the world too much in this retreat. They'll just burden the mind. Have forgot about them. Push them aside. Left them outside the monastery. No need to bring them in yet. We'll talk about them just before you leave. This is another part of wisdom, letting go of the past, all the past. It was one of my favorite quotations is from an old British Prime Minister called Harold Macmillan. He was a Prime Minister when I was a young boy. And even after he retired or got elected out of office, I forget how he lost his Prime Ministership, he was still an elder statesman, and people used to consult him for his advice on all sorts of problems. And once, I forget what year, someone asked him about the problem in the Middle East, what he would do about the problem in the Middle East. And his reply, just without any pause, was, there is no problem in the Middle East. And the reporter said, what do you mean there's no problem in the Middle East? The Palestinians are killing the Israelis are killing the Palestinians, there's wars going on. What do you mean there's no problem? And very calmly, this very experienced Prime Minister said, look, he said, problems are things which have solutions. There's no solution in the Middle East. That's why it's not a problem. And that was actually the result of many years of experience. You developed a bit of wisdom. At the moment, whatever happens in your life is not a problem. You're not looking for solutions at the moment. Nothing to do with you. That's the only way he could survive in such a responsible, busy job. He'd only concern himself with those things which he could find solutions for. They were his problems. Right. Trying to fix a problem there's no solution for, you're wasting your time. This is like using wisdom, even in the realm of like a prime minister. You can only do so much.
I was wondering if you'd be able to make that kind of reply if he was still the Prime Minister.
Yeah, well, apparently that he did make that reply when he was the Prime Minister, because, you know, he had many responsibilities and duties, but some were just simply too much. You couldn't solve them. And so isn't it wise to put your energies on those problems you can solve, or wasting your time and energy on things which are just beyond you for the time being? Maybe later on a solution might come up and then it's a problem. Well, I think the politics have got politicians have got a very skillful way of hiding what they're really thinking and just saying what people like to hear. Okay, I think that's enough for today's talk.